What do Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Queen Elizabeth II, and rapper RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan all have in common? They all play chess. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn. It's 7 minutes after 10 on Thursday, August 2nd, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I have two guests joining me this hour to make the case for playing chess and teaching our kids to do it, too. I'd like to hear from you this hour, by the way. Do you play chess? Have you taught your kids? Do you play competitively? And how about the teachers out there? Do you have chess in your schools? Tell us why. You can call 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. First, I'll bring on Lisa Suhesh. Her piece on the Christian Science Monitor website prompted this show. She's a journalist, children's author, and founder of the Norfolk Initiative for Chess Excellence. She joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
I'm glad you could join us. Now, your piece on the Christian Science Monitor site made the case that, in general, chess should get more attention, maybe even as much as the Summer Olympics. Why?
Well, chess actually is more than just a game. It's like if your mind was a tool, chess would be the sharpener. And so many athletes, even Olympic athletes, play chess. It's such an integral part of strategy and team play that I think that they should have them in the games. They did originally plan to do that in the early 20s.
And I'll bring on our other guest this hour, Susan Polgar. She is a chess grandmaster. She's won 4 Women's World Chess Championships and directs the Susan Polgar Institute for Chess Excellence at Webster University. She also joins us by phone. Susan Polgar, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Good morning.
Now, first of all, how does someone become a grandmaster in chess?
Well, first of all, it takes a lot of practice, and then, of course, there are some specific requirements for how to obtain the title.
And what are the requirements? What did you have to do to get that title?
Well, I mean, more technically, you have to perform a 2,600 performance at 3 different events, at least out of 24 games. And, you know, basically, you have to beat and draw grandmasters to show that you're just as good as they are. But there are particular formulas that you have to.
So all you have to do is beat some of the best players, the acknowledged best players in the world.
Kind of, yes.
Sounds like a pretty tall order. Well, first, I want to hear how you both got involved with chess. Lisa, let's start with you. When did you first play? What excited you about the game?
Well, actually, I learned to play from my father when I was very young, probably around 6 or 7. But I will tell you, I am nowhere close to grandmaster. I'm more like grandmomster. I'm an absolutely dreadful chess player. But what really got me into the game recently was that I have 4 sons, and my youngest one, who's now 8, has Asperger's syndrome, which is part of the autism spectrum. And he was very hard to communicate with for a long time. We could only talk to him through his train set. But as he got a little bit older, he got very involved in chess. His father and brothers all played, and it was my way of really communicating with him. And when I saw that it was a great way to connect him to other kids, I realized there was a huge social value to the game that I just hadn't seen before.
And we'll get more into the social value of the game. I'll ask right now, mentioning the train issue, you are in the midst of your project in Virginia there. You're converting, is it an old train station into a community center targeted toward teaching chess? Do I have that right?
That's right. It's going to be called the Train of Thought Center, and it is an old trolley train station from 1920. And we thought when someone donated the use of the train station to us that it already has a huge platform in it. I thought, well, it would make sense to put trains in the train station and use them to teach science, technology, engineering, and math, because that's the way my little boy has always learned, was through that kind of interaction. And chess is just a natural for building not only critical thinking skills, but community. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to put it out there, but we're not making it an exclusive sport. This, in the way we're doing it in Virginia, it is at-risk kids, low-income neighborhoods, children with autism spectrum, and the entire chess community. So we're really just kicking the door down with this.
Sounds like a fun project. Now, Susan Polgar, your road to a grandmaster, it started when you were a kid. Your parents were very involved in chess. Is that right?
Well, yes and no. They were really not involved until I showed an interest in the game. So I made them involved.
I see.
Yeah, I mean, my father liked to play, but just like a casual player. He never competed in tournaments or didn't even own a chess book. So it was really me who got him deeper into the game.
And what was the moment for you, if you can remember that early? When did it hit you that chess was your life?
Well, obviously, I liked the game from the very beginning, and I had my early successes when I was just 4.5 years old, when I won the championship of Budapest, Hungary, where I grew up, among all girls under the age of 11. And not only I won, but I won all my games 10 out of 10. So that was kind of a big boost to my self-confidence, and then I guess motivation also for my parents, that in addition for me liking the game, I may have some talent and it's something worthwhile pursuing, which they helped me with a great deal. And, of course, I'm very thankful to them for it.
Now, with the Summer Olympics going on, there's a lot of talk about how these people get so excellent at the things they do. What was the path from knowing that you're good at it initially to becoming one of the greats of the game?
Well, you know, just like in other sports, and I personally know Hungarian swimming Olympic champions and gymnasts and other sports. So just like in other sports, you just have to put in the work. You know, basically there is no shortcut or there is no way around it. In addition to obviously having a special love for the activity, whether it's chess or swimming or another sport, you know, you just have to put in daily 6-8 hours or so trainings, you know, sometimes more, sometimes less. But, you know, it's just certain things become second nature if you keep practicing it. And they start clicking, and whether, you know, it's a physical sport or we're talking about science or art or chess. And that's what it takes, you know, to kind of think about it at all times, even if you're not doing it. But certain things mature while you're sleeping or while you do other activities, or, you know, you get some ideas even from other activities that you can use in your own sport.
I saw a quote on your website from you, and I wish I jotted it down, and I didn't, but it was something to the effect of, it isn't just, you know, putting in the time, but trying to figure out where you need the work and figuring out how you can really hone in on that to get excellent at chess or anything else for that matter.
Well, I mean, obviously that is the difference, I think, between the ones who become really great or world champions or Olympic champions, that not only that they put in the work, as of the amount of work, but they also choose a better way of spending that time in focusing in on what's needed. I mean, just to give you a basic example, in chess, one of the big mistakes a lot of people who want to improve do is that because the game starts with the opening, they think that's the area of the game that they need to spend the most time, the most focus on. And until you become a semi-professional or professional player, that's totally irrelevant and useless, really. Hmm. You really need to focus on how to do the combinations that lead to checkmates or the end games that help you finish out a game. And for that, just for example, kind of generalizing it, but finding the right area to work on is, I would say, just as important as of how much time you spend.
Rob Ferret filling in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking about chess this hour with Lisa Suhey. She's an advocate for chess from Virginia. She's also a children's author. She had a piece on the Christian Science Monitor making the case for chess. And also Susan Polgar, chess grandmaster. How about you? Do you love the game? Are you a chess competitor? Do you participate in tournaments? Are you a casual chess player who keeps getting beat but is always ready for another game? Are you teaching your kids how to play chess, maybe playing along with them? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, with your thoughts, your stories, your questions. You can also email talk@wpr.org. Now, I know both of you are chess moms. Lisa, you mentioned teaching your kids. How important do you think it is for parents to get their kids involved in playing chess?
You know, at one time, I would have thought it wasn't as big a deal as it is, but having seen the base that it gave my kids and the kids that I work with for their schoolwork, I'd say it's mission critical. It's like the alphabet or their times tables, because It's like you have to put this down as a foundation for critical thinking before you even send them to school. I think that the ability to make decisions and take time to think, what I see in a lot of children is they do badly in standardized testing, and standardized testing is such a big deal in your schools and how your schools get funded, but kids rush through them, or they make bad decisions, and they don't think ahead. And chess is a game that really does slow a person down, makes them think, makes them look at the options and the alternatives and turn things around to really get the answers. And whether you're doing that in life with, say, the move of, you know, learning about the poison pawn, you take that pawn, you're going to lose something valuable. That one was hanging out there just as a tease to get you. Well, it's just like in life. There are opportunities that look too good to be true, and they really are. And so it sort of converts into life lessons for parenting, too. So that's why I say it's really mission critical to get it going. And don't be afraid that you have to be a grandmaster or even a chess player to teach your child. You can learn together, and that's totally cool.
Susan, you are a grandmaster and a mom. How did you introduce your kids to chess, or what tips would you share for bringing kids into the game?
Well, I strongly believe that chess is a wonderful tool to develop the mind of children, and that was my primary focus when I introduced chess to my own kids, and they both play, and I never pushed them to kind of follow my footsteps as of taking it professionally or that seriously. And my younger one basically plays on a casual level. He won like city championship where we used to live in Texas and things like that, but he doesn't really practice or compete much. On the other hand, my elder son, he loves the game a lot, and he's pretty good at it, and he competes more seriously. So, you know, as I said, my focus is nevertheless that, as Lisa mentioned, all the life lessons to be learned from chess, the discipline, the focus, the concentration, to make responsible decisions, the pattern recognition that it develops. And also it can open doors, as nowadays there are more and more universities that offer scholarships for chess players. Like the latest addition to this family has been Webster University, where I'm leading the institute and running the SPICE program. And even beyond that, there are internships available for chess players in particular and other opportunities. So in addition, you know, they can open a lot of doors, whether it's during their academic years or beyond. So I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful under-promoted activity that can be really all good for all young people.
Now, I'm a board game nerd. I play lots and lots of different board games, and I love them. And I play chess not very well. I think my 9-year-olds, are probably not too far off from being able to beat me. But the most important thing for me in a game is fun. Is chess, make the case for the fun side of chess, Susan.
Absolutely. I obviously love the game, and I can thank my dad for that, because he showed me what's beautiful about chess very early on. And some of those combinations, then let's say a pawn, which normally would promote to a queen, the most valuable piece in the game, let's say needs to promote to a knight or a bishop, which is normally a lot less valuable piece. There is just some amazing beauty in some of those type of combinations of puzzles when you figure out those solutions or other sacrifices, when you sacrifice several pieces in a row in order to checkmate at the end of the game. So I think when somebody learns chess, and after just learning the rules, get introduced to all these beautiful elements in the game, just like in music and art, and you get to appreciate the beauty, I think the game can become a lot of fun.
And Lisa, you do programs working with not just your own kids, but other young kids. How far in do you get to where you see their eyes start to light up about the game?
The door. Well, we do chess just a little bit differently. Some people who are really diehard chess aficionados do have to take a deep breath in and out of a paper bag for the first few seconds. Some do flee in terror. We have boards that are all different colors. Some of them have little monkeys in the corner squares. We play with pieces, actually, from a place called Cajun Chess, that are different colors. So we have like bubblegum pink versus blue or green or yellow. We did that specifically because we are in the inner city with most of the program, and I noticed that kids were refusing to play white. And I'd say, you know, here's white. And they'd say, I'm not white, so I'm not going to play white.
Interesting.
So I needed to sort of break that, and in the process of making it more enticing, switch the colors of the pieces and put on a little bit of light jazz or, you know, some happy, fun music in the background. We've got snacks. People come in. We play bug house chess. We play Sirwan chess. We really change it up.
All right. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. I'm talking to Lisa Suhey and chess grandmaster Susan Polgar. We are talking about the game of chess, why to play it, why to watch it, why to introduce children to it. Tell us your chess story at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Are you a hardcore chess enthusiast? Do you compete? Are you a casual player? Do you like playing a game with your kids, your parents, your relatives, friends once a week or so? Do you play chess online nowadays? I've done a little bit of that. I mostly lose. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. 800-642-1234. You can email talk@WPR.org or post on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret filling in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Kathleen will be back in action on Monday. She'll start off Monday at 9 with next week's edition of All Things Political, talking about the presidential race, Wisconsin's U.S. Senate race, and more, whatever happens between now and then. Right now, we are talking about chess, the game, the lifestyle, and why maybe we should play it and teach our kids how to play it. Guests are Lisa Suhey. She's the founder of the Norfolk Initiative for Chess Excellence in Virginia. She's a big fan of the game, encouraging others to play it, especially kids. And chess grandmaster Susan Polgar. And we'll get to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Aaron starts us off in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Aaron.
Hello. Thanks, Rob, for taking my call. I learned chess when I was in grade school during a free time class with another student named Chuck Clevenger, who was a couple years older, in an older brother's class, and he taught me how to play chess. He went on to work for the Freshwater Biological Institute, creating organisms that eat oil. And now, I play chess whenever I can, and my friend's trying to start a chess night every Wednesday night in Door County on 3rd Avenue at his bookstore. Chess and other games like chess have inspired me to create my own game called Tetragon, which is inspired by chess. So it's a very inspiring thing for me.
All right. Thanks a lot for sharing your story, Aaron. Well, a couple things there. Let's start off with learning in schools. Lisa, let's start with you. Do you see schools integrating chess into the curriculum, or at least clubs or spare time?
You know, I would love to see more of it. I have seen quite a few schools that have tried to incorporate it. I think that the problem that they are running into, at least in Virginia, because that's all I'm really qualified to speak about in our immediate area, is that there's so little time in the school day, and after-school programs have faded out because schools can't afford to do the busing after schools, that I found that teachers really have taken it on their own initiative to sort of incorporate it into their lesson plans. And that's one of the things that we're working with. We want to hear from more teachers because we're creating a website where teachers can share their lesson plans based on chess. Using it, I used it for English, for example. I call it a pawn to power essay. Which piece are you on the board? Which one do you most relate to? Which one do you think you are today? And which one do you want to be when you grow up? And how do you think you'll get there? So chess can be worked in teaching them how to play in the regular classroom setting and not just separated out as a club where people have to find sponsors and time to do it separately.
And then I think the other half of what Aaron was saying was the idea of chess as inspiration. It inspired his creativity to come up with another game, and inspired one of the people who taught him to play to go on and do interesting things in science. So even if we don't become grandmasters, Susan, do you think chess inspires us to do good things creatively?
I think so. Definitely it does. And moreover, I know that chess also can give a lot of self-confidence for children who are maybe not as athletic or you know, not the coolest kids in school. I think it's an avenue for them also to excel and gain self-confidence. And I have seen thousands of cases of that kids who, you know, otherwise are not as popular, they can gain their success and shine within because of their chess success.
Thanks a lot for the call, Aaron. We'll go now to John in Eagle River. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. I played as a youngster, and then I played competitively in college back in the 60s, and I'm 69 now. And I discovered the Internet in the about 2000 in Pogo.com, so I now play with people all over the world. And what it's done, equally to listening to WPR, it's improved my thinking, my thought process. It's probably forestalled Alzheimer's. It's a spectacular game. And I live in Mexico part of the year, and I play the 18-year-old national champion, and he beats me 10 out of 10 consistently.
All right, but it's still fun, and you still learn something every time, I bet.
Absolutely. It's a spectacular game. And, in terms of strategy, it teaches you everything you need to know about life. You'll learn on a chessboard.
Great. Well, good luck in your next game, John, and thanks for calling in. You know, this reminds me of a slogan of a computer game I play. It's losing is fun. Can you talk about the value of losing games and what you learn about the game from that, Susan Polgar?
Well, that's what I always tell my students, you know, that they don't look at a game that you lost that, oh, my God, it's the end of the world, but look at it as a learning experience and make sure you do not repeat the same mistake again and learn to analyze and the critical thinking on how to improve on it. And it's not just about that very game in chess, but, you know, as we talked about it, it's about a life skill to learn from our mistakes. It's the basis of all research and science, you know, to see what happened and then see how we can improve on it. So that whole thought process that we're practicing when we play or we analyze our chess games after it's over, I think it can be exactly translated and used in our real life, and I think that's so important. And that's why I founded the Susan Polgar Foundation 10 years ago to promote the benefits of chess for children. And I know our caller has just told us about the chess being used also possibly as a tool to prevent or delay Alzheimer's disease. And so those are exactly the areas that my foundation is promoting and working with and is looking forward to doing research on.
Thanks for the call. Now we go to Dale in Oshkosh. Dale, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? Great show today. I just wanted to say I work at a nonprofit youth organization up in Neenah, Wisconsin, and I teach the kids all kinds of nerdy board games. You just kind of mentioned that you're a nerdy board game guy yourself.
And, yes, I am.
So, you know, I teach the kids, like, you know, we'll play Bang and Munchkin and all these kinds of games that, you know, you wouldn't think that some of these guys who, like, a lot of them are, they come from at-risk homes. And they'll come in, and the way they can maneuver around, like, ideas, like, I'm even teaching them this thing called Pathfinder, which it's kind of like D&D. And then, like, to watch them create, you know, like, creatively, like, go through these adventures and stuff like that is awesome. Like, it especially works with, like, we have a bunch of kids with Asperger's that come in. And, like, chess, I play chess with them all the time. And, it's just great that, you know, to watch these kids be able to figure out, you know, problem solving and all these skills that you guys are talking about. I just kind of wanted to throw that into the conversation that it's going on a lot of places that, you know, like a nerdy board game revolution. And I work at a comic book shop on the weekends, and we actually sell the guy who mentioned the Tetragon. We sell that there.
Oh, okay.
I haven't been able to try it, but it looks really interesting.
Thanks for the call, Dale, and keep teaching chess at the Youth Center. Lisa, you do something similar, of course. Do you think maybe we underestimate the, you know, I'll throw quotes around it, at-risk kids, and maybe we get surprised when they take on a game like chess and grasp it and maybe even excel at it?
Yeah, I think that's where we always hit that kind of big, fat wall of low expectation. I think that just societally, because we're not seeing a lot of Maurice Ashleys out there, that people do assume that because of a child's skin color or their social or financial situation, that for some reason they're either not going to be able to understand the game or they won't do well in the game. I think that chess has a really interesting kind of double edge to it. I think that for kids who, as Susan said, might be the kids who are less socially inclined, it's a game that really builds confidence. But also for kids who are out there, who are super popular and who may be the basketball or track star or football star or jiu-jitsu star like Henner Gracie or someone, you know, out there, that they can't get an intellectual game. And I think that they're flocking to this game to prove how intellectual they really are. So I think that this is a game that has the potential to really get rid of and erode that stereotype, and we need to stop looking at it like it's an elitist game, because it really isn't.
Thanks for the call, Dale. Rob Ferret filling in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network. We are talking about chess this hour with Lisa Suhey. She's a journalist, a children's author, founder of the Norfolk Initiative for Chess Excellence, and Susan Polgar, a chess grandmaster, a winner of multiple world chess championships. She directs the Susan Polgar Institute for Chess Excellence at Webster University. Back to the phones now. We have Steve in Menominee on the line. Steve, hi.
Yeah, good morning. Boy, what an honor to be speaking on the same conversation with the great Susan Polgar. This is giving me goosebumps here. When I was in high school back in the late 80s, was president of my local chess club. The advisor that we had, God bless him, you know, he helped us facilitate our club, but he really wasn't somebody who knew the game at all. But I was fortunate enough, before I even got involved in the club in high school, there were several guys in the local community, in the rural community between Superior and Ashland there, that took me under their wing. And I don't know if any of them are listening today, but Clint, Fred, and God rest his soul, Larry, and all of them. God bless them, because they didn't have to. They had, you know, they were adult guys and they were great players. They were very good with their own company, but they took me under their wing and conceded a couple pieces to me at the start of a game until I could get up to their level, and just built my interest in it, and so I'm very fortunate that way, and now it's so great to see Magnus Carlsen being a new one on the horizon, because I'm Norwegian, half Norwegian, and so that's an inspiration, just like Bobby Fischer was back in the day.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Steve. Getting involved in chess clubs, is that a good idea? Should we be looking for those in our neighborhoods or starting them up if we don't have them? Susan Polgar?
Absolutely. I think chess is for everyone, and that's another wonderful thing about chess, that it's a very inexpensive game. Anybody can afford a $5-$10 chess set and board. It's an equalizer. It's fair to, you know, from all people coming from all socioeconomic or cultural backgrounds, and it doesn't matter if you're a male or a female. It just equalizes, I think, all grounds. And actually, that was one of the things that attracted me also to the game when I was real young. As a young girl, it wasn't a very common thing to see girls in chess clubs or parks where they play chess. And it was an activity that I could do on an equal footing against a grown man, 2, 3, 4 times my age. And, you know, it was an interesting thing for me. It was a self-confidence boost, and I thought it was very cool.
That reminds me, Jean called and couldn't stay on the line. She wants to know why there's a separate tournament for men and women. Why not combine the two?
Well, when I started out, there was very much a segregation between women only and open events. And in fact, there were a number of occasions when I was not allowed simply to participate in an event for men because it was restricted. So it was called as such. And I consider, or the world considers, I guess, me as a pioneer in fighting for that change. And I was one of the first female players who were mostly or at some certain point exclusively playing in open or man events, as they used to call them. In fact, I was the first one who qualified to compete in the Men's World Championship back in 1986. And because of the name of the event, the International Chess Federation did not allow me to compete there. Thanks to my incident later on, it has been removed, the name Men's, and today it's called the Chess World Championship, as it should be. With that said, I think women can become, obviously, a grandmaster, and even beyond that, being the world champion or one of the very top players in the world. However, even today, the ratio is of course, largely favoring men. In most chess tournaments, you would see 80, 90, or even more percent men versus girls or women. And in order to encourage more girls, especially in elementary school or middle school, girls generally feel, in elementary school age especially, more comfortable with other girls, simply socially. And they get discouraged when they are the only one or two girls out of 20 or 30 in the club, and they socially simply dislike it and they give up on it. So I think we need to raise, the numbers for girls, women to participate. And I think my dream is and my hope is that eventually there won't be a need to have separate women-only events.
All right, we'll go back to the phones now with Tim in Eau Claire. Tim, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm an avid Risk player, the board game Risk. Very proud of my record. I'm 697-0. The other way around. I've never lost. Played 697 games so far. And I'm wondering if either of the guests have played Risk before and how they feel the skill sets translate back and forth between Risk and chess or between chess and Risk.
Either of you familiar with... Oh, go ahead.
I'm Susan. I used to play, actually. It's one of the few board games that I used to play with one of my former boyfriends. And it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. To me, the fact I did not like it, it was very long, usually.
Mm-hmm.
It took a couple hours to finish a game. It has some similarities with chess, but I think that chess is a lot more complex game. Obviously, it's the oldest game out there, over 2,000 years old, and they still haven't solved it, and it's very, very rich. And, of course, the major difference between Risk and chess that in Risk there is a significant element of luck, while in chess it's very minimal, if any.
Lots of dice rolling and Risk. Yeah, this brings up a good comment from Eric on Facebook. He writes, I love the subtlety and depth of strategy that can be achieved. It's a game of pure mind, and each win is a triumph, each loss a tragedy. Lisa, your thoughts on that, and on the no dice, it's all your mind in the game.
Yeah, I'm always amazed that people think that chess is only taken seriously at higher levels, because I can show you a five-year-old the other day who sat across from a guy who's in his 50s, and the two of them, they might as well have been locked in Mortal Kombat right at that moment, and it was possibly one of the worst chess games ever played. If you were to have written it down, you know, Susan would have just had to close her eyes, but they played it. Every second of it, like that, you know, and my 8-year-old, who normally isn't really great at tuning into other people's emotions, said, Mom, they are both so in the moment. That's what it is. You're living. You're really living. Maybe that's what the sport connection really is on a very visceral level with chess, is that, you know, your heart is pounding. You are invested, and it's all about that moment.
And Susan, you mentioned the length of Risk, and that reminds me, I watched a video on, I think it was on your website, and a bit of it involved you playing chess with a timer. And I think of chess as a slow game with lots of pauses and contemplation. And this was boom, 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 one move right after another. How much difference does that make playing with that timer versus without?
Well, practically all chess competitions are being played with a timer or a chess clock, as we call it. And there are different formats. There is, of course, the classical time control, when you typically play 4, 5, or even more hours. But it is becoming, in the past couple decades, more and more popular, the shorter time control, as I guess our life in general is speeding up. And we have a lot of competitions with major prizes and all the top players competing that are only game 25, meaning that each of the two players would get 25 minutes only for the entire game, or even the shorter time controls where the players would get 3 or 5 minutes only for the entire game. So probably what you may have seen is a game that was something like that, or even 1 minute, which is called the bullet chess, that you only have 1 minute to complete all the moves. Each side has 1 minute, 60 seconds. And believe it or not, people play pretty decent level chess, and the games can go for 60, 80 moves. Or I've seen even games, believe it or not, online that people played a couple hundred moves. It's just insane how fast people can play. And even in regular games like bullet games that are 1 minute games that could be only, let's say, 50, 60 moves, the level of the game can be pretty high. You'd be surprised.
I think my big problem would be forfeiting because I kept knocking over all the pieces in my haste to move them. We are talking about chess this hour with Lisa Suhe. She's the founder of the Norfolk Initiative for Chess Excellence. She inspired this hour with her piece on the Christian Science Monitor. We also have chess grandmaster Susan Polgar. She's based out of St. Louis now. She's won many international championships. We're talking about the love of the game of chess, the value of playing it, why to teach it to kids. And we're taking your stories, your ideas, and your questions at 800-642-1234. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret, filling in for Kathleen Dunn here in the Ideas Network for the next 15 minutes or so. Kathleen is back on Monday, and at this time on Monday, Gore Vidal just passed away, the author, novelist, journalist. She'll talk to Fred Kaplan, who's written a biography of Gore Vidal, the Slate writer Fred Kaplan. So look at Gore Vidal's life and work Monday at this time. Right now, we're talking about chess with Lisa Suhe. She is a chess advocate, trying to get people to teach kids to play it in her area in Virginia, and chess grandmaster, Susan Polgar. Taking your calls about chess. How did you get started? Do you love the game? Do you play competitively or casually? Do you play it with your kids? 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. Charles in Door County is on the line now. Hi, Charles.
Good morning. I think chess, like a lot of mental activities of a similar nature, are very beneficial to children today. And there's a studies being done at the University of Wisconsin, at Harvard, and at UCLA. With the advent of computers, an online thing, we're beginning to find that children who are, I don't want to use the word addicted to, but constantly online with computers, are not learning basic skills of how to think. In playing a game of chess, there are many different ways to approach it. They are referred to in different names and different types of strategy. But what it does teach a child, that child, how to think, that there is no one single solution to a problem, that problem solving is multidimensional, and that you look upon problems as being multidimensional in solving. And by doing so, the child develops good thinking skills. I'm afraid that what they're finding is that kids who are on computers all the time are not developed thinking skills because they can readily go and find an answer. They don't have to go through a solution or a problem-solving solution to get to that answer.
Gotcha. Thanks, Charles. I'm going to jump in there because I really want to get a response. You brought up some interesting points. Lisa Suhe, chess, and you've talked about its benefits for developing our thinking, but specifically problem-solving that we might not be learning in our online world.
I have to say I really do agree with Charles on that point. As the mother of four boys, I have an 8-year-old, a 13-year-old, a 17-year-old, and an 18-year-old. So one of the biggest challenges I face is prying them away from all things electronic, and I do find that by keeping chess in the mix, and not just on the computer, although the computer is great, I really do like the social interaction it creates in the household and the vitality it creates. But in any form, I find that, at least with my own sons, it does force them to look at other things. And I do like that they are the ones that are perhaps considered by their teachers to be just a little off-putting because they don't take
the answers at face value. They always question. They want to know where it came from and how to do it, and is there another way? And that's what I think is improving them academically.
Thanks for the call. We'll go down to Tom and Racine. Tom, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. Hey, I'm a chess player myself, a chess dad, and a chess coach. And I just wanted to say a couple things about chess in Wisconsin. We have a pretty good scholastic chess scene in Wisconsin with the Wisconsin Scholastic Chess Federation. And you can almost any weekend during the school year, you can find a Saturday tournament somewhere in the, especially in the Milwaukee area, but also Madison. They've made inroads into Sheboygan. And for about $5, you can have your kid go and play a full-day tournament chess. And they get a scholastic rating, and they can even win trophies and win medals. And I also wanted to mention that we have two notable chess players who are young people in Wisconsin. One is Anu Rajendra, who just won a national girls championship. And then we also have a guy out in the Madison area, Awander Liang, who just became the youngest player ever to beat a grandmaster. He's only 9 years old.
No, okay. Here
so
in Wisconsin.
A lot of good scholastic chess. Yep, here in Wisconsin. I'm sure Susan knows about him.
Well, Tom, before I ask Susan that, where can people go to find information about those scholastic events you mentioned?
Well, wisconsinscholasticchess.org.
That's pretty straightforward.
And, yep, it's a pretty cool site.
All right, well, thanks a lot for calling in, Tom. I'm glad you shared that.
You're welcome.
Susan, first of all, have you heard about our Wisconsin phenomenon, the 9-year-old?
Yes, actually, I met him. He participated and won one of the sections of the Susan Polgar World Open Championship that was held in Chicago last October. And at the time, he was, I think, only 8 years old. And his name is Awander, which is an unusual name, but he is really Awander. I think it's a unique name his parents gave him, but they made it happen. And in fact, he hit the news the last few days, I think within a past week or so, he broke that record of being by far the youngest person ever in the world to defeat a grandmaster. So he has obviously a bright future ahead of him. I know that they are looking for support because they don't come with a family from with much means. But if he'll get the help and the resources to support his further development in chess, he has amazing potential ahead of him.
Rob Ferret talking about chess today with Grandmaster Susan Polgar and Lisa Suhey, founder of the Norfolk Initiative for Chess Excellence. She wrote a piece in the Christian Science Monitor, a booster piece for chess, I think we could say. You can join in. The lines were full, but some have opened up now at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Talk about your love of the game or your frustrations with chess. Your questions, too, 800-642-1234. Staying with the idea of competitive chess, I promised before the show we'd touch on the big chess Olympia. Now, Susan, that's later this month in Turkey, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And, of course, I participated in four Olympiads as a competitor, but now in a different capacity I will be there as five of our students from Webster University. We represent not only Webster, but their respective countries, and they hail from five different countries, from Sweden to Germany and the Philippines and the United States. And so, therefore, they are amazingly successful athletes, and I was there as partly as their coach, and I'm also the chairperson of the Women's Commission at the International Chess Federation. So it's a major event. The Chess Olympiad happens every 2 years, and in the number of countries, it is larger than the Winter Olympics, and it's only a little bit behind the Summer Olympics.
And Lisa, you talk a little bit in the piece you wrote about the idea of chess as a spectator sport. Would it be fun to watch a broadcast of the Chess Olympiad?
Well, I think that anyone who's watched the broadcasts of Bobby Fischer playing and was so completely demoralized and sad when he insisted cameras be taken out will tell you that it's fascinating. It's great to watch. I think that it would be a lot of fun. I want to hear Bob Costas and maybe Al Troutwig go at it back and forth and banter. In fact, I put that challenge out there. I want them to demo it for us before this Olympics is over.
I would want to bring John Madden out of retirement, and he could have the little teleprompter and draw the lines and circles and arrows on there. I could actually see that working pretty well.
Actually, I saw
saw John McEnroe on, and I think Susan can confirm this or not, but I think John McEnroe is quite a chess player, so he'd be my pick.
I know he likes chess, but I never met him in person, so I don't know. I know, on the other hand, Boris Becker likes to play, and many other tennis players and other athletes. I met Karim Abdul-Jabbar. I know he likes chess. And the list goes really on and on. And I know a lot of football players, baseball players, you know, they play chess in between their trainings or...
Interesting.
Well, maybe we need an exhibition game.
Definitely. Queen Elizabeth against Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I'd pay to see that, I think.
I think everyone would. There you go. That's how you make chess fun to watch.
All right, back to the phones now. Paul has been waiting in West Bend. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, good morning. On easy lies the head that wears a crown, per Shakespeare. The intent, of course, is to assassinate the king. Having said that, I think the genetic component plays an enormous part in a human being's ability to master the game at high level. I think everybody eventually will plateau out, and if you've been gifted with the right brain structure, you'll become a grandmaster. So, but having said that, I think the game, when you plateau out, whether you're a 2,000 or 1,600, clearly it teaches in an abstract form the ability to evaluate complex, an ever-changing complex situation, and you have to go down multiple channels and evaluate what your opponent may move next, and is that going to improve your position? So I think it does... convey out into the rest of your ability to analyze life's problems that you're confronted with.
Gotcha. Thanks for calling in, Paul. Well, his first idea that maybe we have an inherent knack, maybe it's genetic. Susan Polgar, do you buy that?
Well, I know there are two groups of people, some that think that it comes about nature. It's about, you know, your talent you're born with, and another group who believe in the nurture. And basically the hard work put in, and I belong to the second group. And I really believe that any healthy child, starting early and getting the right training, has the potential to become a grandmaster or an extremely successful player. And it's really a matter of putting in the work and the discipline and having the right opportunities.
Right.
I just wanted to interject in there that it made me really think, how many of our Olympic athletes that are out there today running track or playing volleyball or badminton or table tennis, where did that seed of that Olympic dream begin? Did someone, you know, teach them that at home? They probably learned it in a public school. They probably got their first exposure to the game that they're playing today for a medal or just for their country from their school. And if we put chess into schools with that same kind of fervor, I think that you would see a greater production of not just chess players who are capable of winning great titles, but people who are great in science, technology, engineering, and math because they have that basis.
Time for one more quick call from Amy in Madison. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I love chess, and one of the things that I really like about it is strategy. And I happen to be a lawyer, a litigator, and that's what I really love about litigation is the strategy. And so I often see parallels between chess and my legal work. I don't have all that much opportunity to play, but I notice that one of my weak areas is chess openings. And I'm wondering if you can recommend any good basic books or articles on chess openings.
Susan?
Well, I mentioned earlier in the conversation that I don't think openings are all that important at most levels unless you're already a master level or above. With that said, there are some generic books that, like White Opening Repertoire, I think it's called, by Grandmaster Albert. He has a nice series both for black and white. You would generally want to, you know, have some ideas, but you really don't need to learn variations of 15, 20 or longer unless you're a professional player. It really, what's most important is to improve your tactical skills, your calculation skills, the endgame technique, understanding of strategy. I think those take you a lot further because openings change. And, you know, as long as you get out of the opening in an okay position, let the fight begin and a better player win.
And then, Lisa, let's give you the last word. When you are introducing the game of chess to kids over time, do you see them sticking with it?
I do, absolutely. In the last 4 years, I still have the majority of the players that we started with. I can't go to the grocery store without someone looking at me and running up and saying, is there chess? I'm like, in the grocery store? And they say, oh, okay, maybe later.
Well, thank you, Lisa Suhey and chess grandmaster Susan Polgar for joining us this hour. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks to all of you for listening and for your great calls, and I hope you have a good game of chess, whether you're competing this weekend or just playing it online with an old friend. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers for producing the program. Rhonda was our on-air producer this hour as well. Kathleen Dunn will be back on Monday with All Things Political at 9 and a look at the life and work of Gore Vidal after 10. I'm Rob Verrett, filling in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.